Well, happy Thursday. Welcome to Perspectives on WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thank you so much for tuning in our direction. And if you want to be part of the proceedings, you can do that. It is easy as pie. We may talk about pie later on today. 850-414-1234 is the number to call. Perspectives@WFSU.org is the email address. And we invite your participation because we are talking about farmers markets and what they bring to the community and what they bring to us as far as consumers are concerned. And we also have some news about a couple of our local farmers markets, and that's why we brought in some of the folks involved with them today, too. So let's meet some of these people. Let's go around and say hi first to an old friend, Derek Phillips of Handsome Harvest Farms. You are back here with us, and we appreciate that, Derek. We're going to be talking about the relocation of the market that for years had been in the pavilion at Market Square and pretty soon making the big move up the street, right?
That's right, Tom. Thanks for having me back. This weekend will be the last farmers market at Market Square for the Tallahassee Farmers Market. It's gone back over 30 years, and starting on the 24th, we will be in our new location at the corner of Cary Forest Parkway and Thomasville Road across from Walmart, right in the Cornerstone Church lot there.
Yeah, boy, that is an accessible place for sure. You don't have to go back on Timberline Road. You are just right there on the main drag coming into town from the north.
It's a beautiful spot. The access is easy since it's right there at the stoplight. Plenty of parking. It's wonderful. It's a great spot that we found.
Well, in addition to your farm, you also brought along a fellow farmer in the personage of Greg Javinsky, who is one of the participants in that particular farmer's market. And Greg, what is your specialty? What do you grow at your place?
Well, we specialize in seasonal vegetables for sure, but we've also expanded into sourdough breads, bagels, dinner rolls, jams, jellies, marmalades, and relishes that we make from locally harvested fruits. And we just have a great time doing it and meeting the people and, working with the locals and making sure that they have a good source and good diversity of fresh vegetables to enjoy.
That's just about a complete product line, I tell you. Well, in the heart of Tallahassee is a community called the Frenchtown neighborhood, one of the first developments in our fine town. And there is a hub in Frenchtown, and that is part and parcel of the purview of a gentleman by the name of Jim Bellamy, because he is the executive director of the Frenchtown Neighborhood Improvement Association and the aforementioned Frenchtown Heritage Hub and the Farmers Market and a kitchen. And what don't you have, Jim Bellamy, down there?
I don't have the money right yet. But anyway, we started our Farmers Market about 2011. Greg and I got a little history about that kind of stuff. And two, three years ago, with the help of KCCI, we found a permanent location at the corner of Georgia and Macomb Street, which was an old construction site. We turned that into a food hub, a commercial kitchen, Christian incubator or whatever. But we got some money from the Department of Agriculture, and we have a fully-fledged now commercial kitchen there at the corner of Macomb and Georgia. Martin Luther King in Georgia. And we have our farmer's market there every Saturday from 10 to 2. But we're looking at doing some other things now. We're looking at doing some value-added stuff to kind of glean some of the fields that a lot of these farmers have of stuff that they don't put on the market. We want to take that stuff and really take it and jar it up, cook it up, and use it, too, as an added product for people in the community.
Well, even those folks who kind of get into cultivation on a very small scale will find themselves sometimes with an overabundance of products.
Right.
So that's kind of what you're looking at as far as the availability of that kitchen. If you want to cook it up at the house, I mean, that's fine. But if you want to take it commercial, you've got to go through yours, right?
Right. one of the reasons that we really started the kitchen was that we had some cottage industry people, people like Greg was saying about the jellies and jams and things of that nature, who could only sell it direct to the consumer. And if it was prepared in a commercial kitchen like we have now, they could leave it in Whole Foods or either market, I mean, Lucky's Market or something like that, even small restaurants or big restaurants or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we started out looking at it from that standpoint. Now we have a full-fledged kitchen. We open up in May, and we have 12 members now, one of which is a vendor that does daily meals for people. They use the facility twice a week to prepare meals for people and pay us about $1,200, $1,500 a month to do that. But it's a kitchen where people can rent it by the hour, by the day, by the week, by the month, or however they want to do it to be able to prepare food, nutritional food for people in the community. We're also looking at the possibility of doing events like training of kids and stuff like that so that they'll learn how to be culinary entrepreneurs and things of that nature. So we're really excited about it. It's a lot of opportunities there, and we're hoping to make it, you said, the center of town. We're hoping to make it center of economic development there in Frenchtown.
Well, seeing as how we have a Food Network superstar in the persona of Chef Shaq here in town, who has also made it one of her missions to teach young people how to cook, not just for themselves, but also in preparation for a full-scale culinary career, that would just seem to be part and parcel of the way that life is going, because cooking is cool. Kids are getting into the kitchen now.
And if I had it to do over today, I would go into culinary. If I was coming out of high school now, because it's a very wide open field and there's a lot of opportunities there.
Well, Derek Phillips, let's talk here about, again, the growing phenomena of the farmers market, because when my family moved down here 40 some years ago, my God, I can't believe next month, 40 years, there was only one.
Mm-hmm.
And that was part and parcel of the Florida Department of Agriculture. It wasn't a private-type farmer's market like the kinds that we see now. And now, I don't want to say they're on every corner, but, man, they're all over the place. What happened?
You know, I'm not sure what's driving the phenomena, but it is true that the group of people who are deciding to start their own businesses, to start farms, to rent or purchase land is blowing up. And a lot of cities around the country have seen this happen earlier on, but in Tallahassee, it's starting to happen now. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing an expansion in the farmers markets. We're seeing an expansion on the online market for local produce. And I can't explain what's driving this back to land phenomena, but we're fortunate here. We have really good soils around. We have really hardworking people that are looking to make a living. And we're fortunate to have the farmers markets where they can go and sell their produce to the customers locally to support that business.
Yeah, and after all, this was originally, I know it's a term that is a pejorative for many people right now, but this was plantation land. This was where people grew stuff. And Greg Javinsky, do we have good soil here? Is it good for growing things?
Oh, it's good for a lot of things. Of course, anyone who does farming in this area realizes the necessity of amending the soils to some degree. There's a couple outlets for that. I personally get a good amount of fish waste from some of the local seafood markets, and we build our own compost from that. So we do have good soils. We've got good climate that we can grow most year round. August is kind of a booger bear, but we're coming out of it now, and people are starting to put in their fall crops. And it's a great place to farm for sure.
Okay. Reed's going to join us here, I think, on line one here on Perspectives as we talk about yummy things here, farmers markets and the like. Hey, Reed, welcome. Good to hear from you, sir.
Hey, buddy. What's going on?
Oh, well, we're hanging in. You doing okay?
Well, I'm doing okay, except I've got an issue. You know, I knew there was a bomb in Gilead, and I was only slightly aware there was a hub in Frenchtown. And I understand from what I just heard that there is someone down there who's taking your overabundance and turning it into meals. Well, my wife didn't have much luck with the cucumbers and the tomatoes, but I am growing spice trees here. I've got basil that I'm afraid is going to attract the attention of FDLE if they fly over here.
Well, as I understand it now, Reed, since there are no laboratories to determine what the content of that basil may be, you may be okay, all right?
I may be okay, yeah, but I would rather it be used for, you know, food stuff than for rope. So I'm wondering, where would I bring something like spices to just drop off to donate?
Okay, boy, let's throw that out to the table here and see what we got here. And Jim, any ideas?
Well, you could bring it down to 524 Martin Luther King Boulevard. We are, like I said, we're just beginning to get into doing the having a senior moment for a second. Very added stuff. But we really wanted to begin to do that. There are a lot of things that we know that people are growing that they don't use, and it's usually just turned over in the field. And what we want to do is we want to take that stuff and jar it up. And we have a packaging machine at our facility. And there may be a way we can package that up and let people have it back, you know, in the community.
Yeah, well, that was the whole concept of that whole farm share initiative, as I understand it, because you had so much excess that was coming out of the fields that would just rot or get plowed back in. Derek?
Well, you know, when we have excess on Saturdays, we'll take it down to the Kearney Center off of Pensacola, and they feed so many people that if you're around that area and you have extra basil, like you're mentioning, or other vegetables, they can use that to feed people as well.
That is a really, really good idea. And the Kearney Center, as I understand, is also going to have an ancillary offering starting next Monday. I just got word on that. We'll tell you more about that on the other side of this break. We're talking farmers markets and fresh homegrown produce. Back on Perspectives, talking farmers markets and homegrown and locally grown produce. You know, you can always find the program online at WFSU.org. Check out this or past Perspectives at that address. Just go to the site, click on radio, hit local programs, pull down the menu. There's Perspectives. Boom, you got it. We archive past shows, try to have the most recent program posted within 24 hours of when it actually appears on the radio. Here with Derek Phillips and Greg Javinsky and Jim Bellamy as we talk about the farmers market phenomenon and all that. And you mentioned something, Greg, a second ago. What are the hot commodities right now? Of course, we're coming off of we're heading into harvest season now, so there's an overabundance of a whole bunch of things right now, right?
You can't hardly turn around without finding somebody that's selling peppers. Everybody's got peppers, okra. It's just that time of year. It's hot. There's not a lot of anything else in the ground. But, you know, farmers are making the transition to their autumn crops, planting out, you know, kales and lettuces and coal crops, things like that. So, it's that transition period that we're going through right now.
Yeah, and last weekend, even you go to the local libraries and they had the seeds out there for the upcoming season, and the cooperative extension folks were there to provide some helpful information about how, like you said, with the soils and everything, how you mm-hmm. beef them up to make them more productive, and even what you can do with this stuff here. What about menus? Are you guys at the Frenchtown Hub in your new kitchen facility, Jim Bellamy, helping folks to plan their own nutritional needs maybe a little bit better than we should? Because, you know, we're in the South, man. We love fried. We'll fry anything. If it moves, we'll fry it.
Yes, we will. We have, excuse me, we have a kitchen manager who used to be the kitchen manager at FAMU, and what she does is she works with people to help them plan their menus and things of that nature. You had on the show last time Rose Garrison, and she's working a lot with the people that come to the market in terms of orientating them and all those kinds of things, yeah.
Yeah, and getting the kids, as you said before, more involved with that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, we really want to get more kids involved. As a matter of fact, we met with the city manager the other day, and they were talking about a program that's run by Kimball Thomas. And Kimball has basically recruited, it's an employment and training program. He's basically recruited about 500 kids, and we were talking about the possibility of some of those kids being trained in culinary experiences, cooking and things of that nature. So the matter of fact, the city manager was saying that he's looking at the possibilities of creating a much broader department and program for those kids, because he said basically Kendall has really established his own high school. 500 kids is quite a few kids.
No kidding.
Right.
But boy, what a great companion program that would be to like Rebecca's Refire program, right, out there at the Hope Community, where, right, the folks who have served their time, they're looking for something to do. Man, that is hot. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Right. So,
you know, one of the things at the Timberland Market that I've noticed, and I've been down there for a number of years now, is there's a lot of families that do all their shopping, all their grocery shopping for the entire week. Because you can get, you know, vegetables, meats, eggs. I mean, there's a whole host of products you can get there. But, you know, and there on a typical Saturday, I would say there's anywhere between, I'm going to say, 400 to 600 folks come through that market. And surprisingly enough, there's a lot of children. And it really gives the kids and the parents a chance to talk with the farmers. And the kids are learning, oh, that's how you plant a seed, or, you know, this is where that comes from. Or, I mean, it's a good way to immerse the kids into where their food's coming from.
And we sure don't want to take away from, again, the large commercial folks that do their thing, but they're... It is still a connection that we all have with food that seems to be enhanced when you can really check out the origins. Like if you go to, Handsome Harvest Farm and see what you guys are doing out there, Derek, and because I know you people come by and you show them how this is done.
We do, and we're planning on joining the farm tour that's coming up, you know, not in the not distant future. But the farmer's market's a great place to go if you are looking for that menu. You can get suggestions from the farmers because the selection is much broader than what you get at the grocery store. For instance, we grow 8 different kinds of sweet peppers that you won't find anywhere else. You know, we have access to catalogs where you can get great seeds for thousands of types of vegetables. At the grocery store, they're growing for something that can transport,
right,
that won't get damaged. It's not about the flavor. Here, we harvest the day before we sell it. So we don't have to worry about transport.
Mm-mm.
And since you harvest it that early and you sell it that quickly, it's going to last for a long time at people's fridges.
And most people don't realize just what the process is if you are bringing in, let's say, produce from California, how long it takes to get here. It isn't overnight. They don't ship it FedEx.
That's the absolute truth. They pick it when it's hard and green. They'll typically gas it with ethylene to make it ripe so that it looks good before it gets there. But that's why people complain about tomatoes, and that's one of our biggest seasons is when people are looking for the fresh tomato. But the truth is the freshness and the flavor and the nutrition is in everything that's sold that's locally grown.
And it even tastes better, to tell you the truth, the stuff that you get there.
Mm-hmm.
And what we were finding was that this younger generation did not know what to do with a lot of the stuff. They look at it and say, I have no idea what to do with this. So, I mean, we have to also educate. We have food demonstrations where we can have people come in and do cooking demonstrations so that they can see how you cook it, because a lot of young people don't even know what to do with it, you know. So we're trying to do that, too.
Well, that's something that we had this discussion before, Jim. Back in the day, and you remember there's still the remnants of a couple little old corner stores,
right,
in Frenchtown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not functioning anymore, but the remnants are still there. Every neighborhood had its own store, and you could go, and there was fresh produce there.
Right. I mean, I grew up in Frenchtown, and there used to be a corner store, grocery store, right on the corner of Carolina and Macomb, and then on the corner of Virginia and Macomb. There was a little store there. So you could get stuff like that. But now we don't have any of those there. As a matter of fact, we don't have any business at all, hardly, in Frenchtown.
Is there any way that that can be recreated? Because you have people who are looking for lifelong careers in the community.
We're trying to do that. As a matter of fact, that was one of the reasons why, that's another reason that the hub is there. We have vendors now who are working in the hub preparing food, and they already are beginning to ask us, like, can you find somebody to wash the dishes? Or can you find somebody to cut up stuff? You know, things like that. So what we're doing is not only are we providing healthy, nutritious food for people, but we're also providing some kind of jobs for people in the community.
Uh-huh. But to remake some of the communities, too, we are going to have neighborhoods, ultimately, that will not require as much, shall we say, personal transportation as we do now. You know, the fact that someone has to get in a car and drive 4 or 5 miles to get a quart of milk just seems kind of ridiculous.
Right. Well, you know, one of the reasons that I got involved in this, I was standing in line one day in the Family Dollar store, and somebody said, lady was buying some chocolate-covered almonds with her EBT card, her food stamp card. And I said, wow, you mean that's what people are eating? You know what I mean? Now, she didn't have anywhere else to go to buy anything else. So she was buying chocolate-covered cashews with her food stamp card.
You can't exactly call that super nutritious.
No. And that kind of thought, you know, that stuck in my mind at that particular time. And, you know, I started saying, well, is there any way that we can do something about this? We ought to.
Derek and Greg, Food Deserts. You guys work as far as getting more of your product into more local outlets.
Well, you know, it's difficult for us to get into grocery chains, and of course in the food deserts, they're non-existent, right? I mean, getting into something even like Whole Foods with a local product, you'd have to go down to Orlando to get into their distribution hub. So for the local farms, where we really are able to get outlets is through local restaurants. We have local restaurants that will purchase from us every week. They are a huge supporting factor. They make specials with our products. That doesn't exactly address the problem of food deserts, which is quite broad. But the more farms we have, there's several urban farms that offer farm stands at their direct location in the heart of Tallahassee. And those are some ways to help that problem.
Okay. Donna joins us here on line one. Let's add her to the conversation here on Perspectives as we talk about farmers markets and fresh, locally produced produce. Hey, Donna, how you doing?
Hey, how are you, Tom?
Could not be doing better. So glad you called.
Yeah. I just could not let today get by without putting in a plug for the Red Hills Online Farmers Market.
Well, I hope that more people will avail themselves of that because you guys are a seething hotbed of local activity when it comes to produce. And also for the folks who have not dropped by online to interface with y'all, how do you do that?
Okay, well, online, it's pretty easy. You just go to rhomarket.com.
And what all can they do as far as actually shopping online and finding out the availability of the produce that your consortium has?
Yeah, well, the homepage has all of the information about the Red Hills Online Farmers Market. All of the produce that is bought through the online market comes from products grown within a 100-mile radius of Tallahassee. You can order starting early Sunday morning and through Tuesday evening, and you sign up originally with a credit card or some other method of payment, and then pick your produce up once a week. And you can see everything that's available. They have a wonderful product list, a list of producers, and all of that is at the rhomarket.com website.
Terrific resource. Donna, thanks so much for kicking that in. Derek?
Yeah, if I could add, RHO Market is great. There's over 50 small businesses that sell on that online market. And on top of the pickup, which is at the old Northwood Mall Center, you can get delivery in town for a small fee. So that's another great way to get your shopping done. meat, eggs, bread, vegetables, fruit products, all in one spot.
Well, something that we need to also add is that there is a growing need for those other types of producers when it comes to dairy, when it comes to meats, because we all can do the peppers and the maters, but it's a little bit more difficult when it comes to the meat production particularly. How are we doing in that regard? How many local sources do we have available for us there?
You know, at the Tallahassee Farmers Market, we're lucky. We have vendors that cover the gamut of chicken, beef, pork, and even goat products available. With our new location at the corner of Cary Forest and Thomasville Road, we're going to have more space to set up more vendors. So if there are, you know, meat farmers listening right now, they're welcome to get on board with us, and we're going to be opening up at our new location for more of those farms.
Okay, there's also honey, and we got to throw in a plug for our good friend Mr. Flagg too, because Frenchtown Bees, that's a he does a very good business
yeah. And it's very local honey because it's on the Bainbridge Road, and his bees are right there where the garden is on Dent Street. So, you know, it does very well there. And you talk about meat and stuff. We have a vendor at our market that brings a freezer every week and set it up. And he has pork, he has goat, he has goat's milk, cheese, and all that kind of stuff too. So I think some of us have maybe not a large variety of it, but we have a limited space where we have meats and stuff. I personally sell the limestone sausage and bacon at the market in Frenchtown. Matter of fact, I just talked to the guy this morning because I have to pick up tomorrow. And it's made right down on Cram Road on the Monticello side. So, I mean, it's very local. So it's like you say, like the vegetables, is very fresh. They just made these sausages on Tuesday, and they'll be selling them on Friday.
Do we have much availability when it comes to seafood? Now, I know you go down, head towards Carabel and everything else, and you're going to find shrimp and oyster sellers, not to the extent that you used to, because a lot of those seafood houses, if they were still in existence, I noticed several of them were blown out by Hurricane Michael, and that they are gone. Is that a problem now, getting seafood into this area then?
At our market, we don't currently have any seafood vendors.
We have West Seafood. Mr. West came out one day and was talking to me about he had a license to sell wholesale and retail. So I said, "You want to come to the market?" And he said, "Market?" I said, "Yeah." He didn't know about us, so he started coming to the market, and he's there every Saturday. And he has crabs, he has shrimp, and to be honest with you, they really taste different from the ones that you buy at the store. You know, the matter of fact, I even sometimes carry my daughter some when I go to Atlanta. She called me the other day and said, "Daddy, I'm out of shrimp." Say, "Them other ones don't taste the same." And they don't. I mean, really, you're talking about regular Gulf shrimp that you have that he brings in on every Saturday, and crabs. We got certain people in the neighborhood that buy 4 or 5 dozen of crabs every week. They come in and then they buy the crabs and stuff. And he has mullet fish. So we have, you know, we have seafood. It was one that I had been looking for. I had tried to find someone that would sell seafood, and I couldn't find anybody. And this just by accident. I ran into him, and now he comes to the market on Saturdays and sells seafood.
That has been such a big change. We had a show last month that was on the rebounding of the seafood industry, but it's now being done, of course, on a more farm than wild harvest type of situation than here. Let's see if we get Malcolm in here before our next break on Perspectives. Hi, Malcolm. Thanks for calling. Yeah, go ahead, Malcolm.
Yes, sir. Well, I have a quick question. Do any of y'all buy or sell chanterelle mushrooms that have been wild foraged? I know that is in high demand for restaurants.
Huh. Let's talk to the restaurant guys who are here. Derek, Greg, what do you
think? You know, I didn't personally. The spots that I knew about this year weren't as flushed as they were in previous years. But you will find chanterelle mushrooms at the Tallahassee Farmers Market from a couple of vendors there, as well as we have one mushroom vendor who cultivate their own oysters and shiitakes and lion's mane and whatnot. But to show up early and you'll be able to find some more than likely.
Okay, great.
And we have a a vendor who also sells mushrooms that's grown locally. It's one of their friends that grows them locally. They don't have them every week, but sometimes they have them there. So, you know, you can find them also at the Frenchtown Market.
No, that's the fun thing, because you never know from week to week what may show up and what you got. It's kind of like a swap shop, you know? Always a little adventure, a treasure waiting to be found. We're talking about farmers markets and the locally grown produce and other yummy things here on this edition of Perspectives. Would love to hear from you, too. Maybe you have a special favorite place that you like to drop by to do your farmer's market shopping. 414-1234 is our number with the 850 in the front end of that, and we'll be right back after this. Up an appetite as we swing in towards the lunch hour here on Perspectives as we continue our discussion about farmers market produce and all the other goodies that you can find there with Derek Phillips and Greg Chavinsky and Jim Bellamy here with us. And let's go to Jonathan before we continue the conversation with these guys. Hey, Jonathan, thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom, it's Jonathan Lammers. How are you?
Hey, real good, man. How's everything been for you this summer?
It has been hot and steamy and a little dry for a while. The comment about the chanterelles really rang home with me. Last year, I probably got about 30 or 40 pounds out of the yard, but with the dry spells, we haven't had too many in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, starting to get those afternoon showers right now, but man, it may come a little bit late for some of the stuff that's out there. But anyway, you are such a maven of history. What you got for us?
I actually wanted to talk about, I don't know if this was covered, but there is a great, great book for organic farming that was written by somebody here in Tallahassee by the name of Art Cheek. And Art used to give lectures across town, and there are some videos of his garden that are on the Florida Memory, the Florida Archives website. Anyway, this book shows you the depth and breadth of what can be grown here. It's pretty amazing. And he gives step-by-step instructions for when you should be planting. So it runs seasonally as well. It's called Down Home Gardening Down South. And it's not in print anymore, but it's not hard to find online through your favorite used bookseller. And again, the gentleman's name is Art Cheek, and it's Down Home Gardening Down South. Wonderful book, and it's, you know, we're very lucky to have something it's written specifically to gardening here in Tallahassee.
That is a great resource. Man, Jonathan, I appreciate that. Art Cheek, boy, that name sounds familiar. I know I've come across it somewhere back in the deep, dark recesses of history, but you can always count on Jonathan to come up with something that's really useful. We have different, those soil types, though. You got the Red Hills stuff with all of the clay and that sort of thing, and then you get down south a little bit, and suddenly you're into like a coastal sandy plain sort of situation. That's got to have some impact on what you can grow where and how, right, Greg?
Oh, most definitely, most definitely. And like I had mentioned earlier, most everyone that farms in this area knows that amendment is important, adding as much organic matter as you possibly can. And if you don't do it on a regular basis, you're back to sand in no time flat. So you've got to keep amending the soil.
Yeah, but and what do you do about, of course, we are in a buggy part of the world. How do you deal with all the different critters that come and try to eat your stuff before you can?
Well, we're actually got an interesting business model. We run guinea hens on our farm, and so we really have no insect pressure at all. We've been real fortunate. We've not had any lost any plants or crops to insects in a good number of years. And the guinea hens, I mean, as soon as the sun breaks in the morning, they're out and about scouting around. We also have located bluebird boxes around the farm, so the bluebirds are always scouting, looking for insects. Yeah. It works.
Okay. Natural pest control. Can't yeah. beat it. What do you guys do at your farm then, Derek?
Well, you know, for organic farmers, it's always important to try to beat the pest before they're there. So you have integrated pest management. It's important to plant your seeds at the right time. It's important not to make sure that your plants aren't too stressed, because if they're more stressed, they're more susceptible. There's other practices, such as having you have a trap crop, for instance, that's more prone to getting a certain type of insect than another. It's also important to have diversity of crops. That's going to, first of all, confuse the bugs. Secondly, it's going to allow a more diverse ecosystem. So if you have wildflowers along your fence rows, if you have lots of different types of plants, you can encourage a predator-prey situation where some of these bugs are going to get attacked through their natural predators. Now, I do have to admit this last year, this is from all of my friends throughout Florida, it's been a very buggy summer. So one word of advice would be to plant more, you know, because if you plant more, you'll have some that will get attacked, but then you'll have some that's just perfect.
You're just increasing the odds of a good harvest there.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Okay.
You know, Tom, in terms of what Greg was saying about working with the soil, we have Urban Farms, Frenchtown Urban Farms. They have a compost business that they have people drop off their compost at the market, and I think for so much a month they pay for it, and they drop off their compost. They use the compost to develop. They use the buckets to develop compost for the vegetables and stuff.
Well, you're taking us back now, because you got folks like Miss Maisha who have been doing gardening in the Frenchtown area for years and years, and just about every house used to have a garden out back.
It used to be in certain areas. I grew up in the community, and in certain areas, like over on 4th Avenue and Rollins Street there, Mr. Rollins used to have a garden back there. As a matter of fact, across the street from me on Georgia Street, Mr. McGee was the last person in Tallahassee, not in Tallahassee, but on Georgia Street, to have hogs. I remember that and growing up, and I was glad that they were gone. Because the smell left, too. But anyway, he was the last person to have hogs. But he also used to have a garden in the back there. And everybody in the neighborhood kind of, you know, ate from that garden.
Well, if you headed a little bit more up Brevard Street, you would have come to a place that used to have pigs, too. And that was the governor's mansion.
Yeah, well.
There was a certain governor back in the day who actually violated city code by having hogs on the mansion property, and just about caused a major ruckus during the one legislative session there.
You know, the other thing that's available at the Timberlane Market, or I guess that's not the proper term anymore, Cornerstone Market? Yeah.
Yeah.
Is a lot of farmers will bring plant starts. And, tomatoes, different vegetables. And people will buy the plants and take them home and grow them themselves. And I'll get people coming in, half a dozen times during the year, and they'll say, well, look, we've got – here's a leaf off my tomato plant. It looks like it's got some kind of disease or something. And so it's a really good way to build, community involvement and let people know that they can certainly do this at home on a smaller scale. But, almost anybody can grow a plant.
Yeah, and it takes a lot of the pressure off of the individual budget of the family, because other than the initial cost of the seeds or the plant itself, little bit of water, a little bit of enhancement for the soil. You got a harvest.
Yeah, and the kids are unplugged. They're outside, actually outside, doing something that can benefit them in the long run. They learn how to grow their own food.
And what does that do, do you think, as far as, again, the kids getting off the screen and actually getting their hands dirty? I mean, what does that do for kids, do you think?
I think first of all, you're going to want to know more about why this plant is behaving this way, or what you can do with the produce you harvest off of it. I think it gets people interested, and they're going to do more research. They're going to want to learn more. They're going to want to grow more, because there's a demand for people are realizing that having a small garden at home has certainly got some advantages.
Mm-hmm.
And, you also find the kids to do that eat healthier too, because they understand what's going on with that, and that's one of the things that we like to do. With the program that we're talking about for the young people, is that we'd also like to take them on tours to the farms, mm-hmm. so that they can understand where the food comes from, how it's grown, and then when they get in the kitchen and start cooking it, they'll have a better appreciation for it, mm-hmm. than they would if they didn't know anything about it.
Well, it's kind of like the School of Arts and Sciences. I'll put a plug in for Cassie Gilman. But, you know, they've got that program going on Thomasville Road, and my grandkids... they've learned to appreciate how good kale can be, and she's teaching them recipes for how to produce this stuff, how to prepare these vegetables. And you know, when you start eating locally, you're going to realize in short order that 3,000-mile salad really isn't that good.
There is a difference in the flavor, and
yes.
Again, so much of it is freshness that you cannot preserve that, whether it's ethylene or whatever other kinds of chemical, falderol you throw at it. It's still, if it is right from the farm, right from the garden, there is something intrinsically different about that flavor, mm-hmm. the consistency, the color, everything that makes it really good.
And the shelf life. Mm-hmm. We buy lettuces from some local vendors because we don't grow a lot of lettuce, but we're always amazed that, you know, this has been in the crisper for a week and a half, and it's just as crisp and fresh as it could possibly be.
We've had customers that tell us 3 weeks on the lettuce.
There you go.
Absolutely.
That's insane.
I know.
Yeah. quick email here. Are chicken eggs available at the Frenchtown Farmers Market?
Yes, they are. We have a gentleman, Mr. Malley, who sells not only chicken eggs, he sells chickens too. He have prepared dressed chickens that people can buy, and he sells chicken parts sometimes. You have wings and you have legs and thighs and things of that nature. But chicken eggs are definitely, we have two vendors that sell eggs. One of them even sells duck eggs. So we have two vendors that it does that.
Well, if you're going to do your own chickens, don't you have to check first with, let's see, city code and then also the homeowners association, because they may not look favorably upon that, you know?
Yeah, well, where he is, I understand he has a beautiful farm, and he has quite a few chickens. Oh. How many did you say? Yeah, Greg?
130.
He has something like that or more. Mm-hmm.
Woo!
You also have to check with the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services.
Yeah, right.
Because you have to get a license to sell
it. Yeah.
There we go. Okay, yeah, we want to do this right, guys. No underground foodstuffs going on here, okay? Black market. Yeah, we're talking farmer's market, not black market. Hey, let's go to line one. We still have some time to get in a call or two. Hello, Hugh. Good to hear from you, sir.
Hey, Tom, thanks. First time I want to say that I have learned that anything you're associated with on WFAC is going to be excellent, and I'm grateful that you're there.
Aw, you are so kind. Thanks, you.
Okay, I want to tell you, I live in Georgia. We do come to Tallahassee, but I just wanted to know that people are thinking about this. At the hospital where I work, every Friday morning in the visitor's lobby, we have a fresh market there where farmers bring things in, and patients and staff can buy things there. But the thing that I really want to tell you about is a book by a man named Tom Darbyshire, who grew up here in Conklin County, Georgia, and now works in a big advertising firm in New York City. But he wrote a book called Who Grew My Soup for Children, to share with them and explain to them where the vegetables come from. And Tom, I'm going to tell you, I have given away dozens of copies of it. Our teachers here use it in the school to instruct kids who have never set foot on a farm or in a garden or anything. And I just wanted to recommend that book to you, sir.
That is terrific. And where is it available, Hugh? Can you
Well, you can get it online. Or I would imagine that if you have, of course, I'm always pushing independent bookstores. And if you have an independent bookstore, I imagine they could get it for you. But it is available online through Amazon. And it's called Who Grew My Soup? And the author's name is Tom Darbyshire, Darbyshire.
Who Grew My Soup? That is all. Yeah, we're taking notes here real fast, you.
Okay, all right. All right, thank you, sir.
Hey, thank you for the kind comments, too. We sure appreciate that. That is, and I know that is part and parcel of what you're trying to do with the whole Frenchtown Hub thing, Jim right. Bellamy, is to get more the entire community involved in this so that we get back to kind of basic principles of where right. we came from and where our food came right. from and all.
You know, when we first opened the market, people were saying, well, you're in competition with the market downtown. I said, no, I'm not in competition with the market downtown. What I'm in competition with is to get these people to understand what's going on in terms of food and nutrition in the community. One of the things that we realized was that one of the issues that we've always had here in the South is that we'll get stuff taken and put it in the freezer and let it stay 6 months and it's fresh. When I worked in D.C. and lived in D.C., I had people who went to the market every day. They would go to the market every day. If they bought meat, they cooked it that day. If they bought vegetables and stuff, they cooked it that day. So, I mean, it was a difference. And what I've always felt is that here we needed to educate people in terms of understanding the value of a market. And like you talk about the freshness and the different tastes and all that. That's very true. I mean, very real. I mean, sometimes my wife and I buy stuff, and we'll sit down and eat and say, ooh, that's so good. And I mean, something that we've been eating all the time, but it didn't taste like mm-hmm. it tastes when we get it directly from the market.
This has been something we've been kicking around for quite some time with other participants here on the program, but the possibility, again, of combining this whole concept of locally grown foods to meet the needs of food deserts, whether it's Frenchtown, South City, whatever, the getting more entrepreneurs involved in local businesses. And again, not to, you know, down the folks at Winn-Dixie and Publix and all that, but to get these small, and again, not convenience stores. We got tons of those. But the fresh food outlets, right where you send the kid right down the end of the block, you know, go get us some collards or get us some peas or whatever that's been grown locally. Can we ever get back to that, do you think?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I have to agree with Mr. Bellamy. You know, we do have to educate each other. And I do need to make a request from our listeners to help with that process. In order for our move to be successful, as we move not this Saturday but the next, we need folks to share that with each other on Facebook, on Instagram, if they can tell each other where the farmer's market is. We currently have 30 small businesses. Maybe that'll increase to 40. When we get more customers showing up, that allows businesses to grow. And I know that's the same for the Frenchtown farmer's market. So people come in and spend in a little bit of money there. That allows people to hire more employees. When their farm expands, that allows them to go to more markets. They can go from 2 employees to 6 employees, start going to 2 or 3 markets a week. And all it takes is folks to show up and get their groceries. So what we've learned is that if people post this in their own neighborhood groups, if they post it on wherever they can and get some conversation going about the Tallahassee Farmers Market moving to the corner of Cary Forest Parkway and Thomasville Road, the other markets that are in town, that's how these things grow. And that's what's going to enable us to grow as businesses. And I think that could potentially open up more farmers markets in areas that don't have them.
Yeah, and back again to the concept of, you know, the little corner store, but a different iteration of that. You know, nothing against the lottery, but no lottery tickets and black and milds. I mean, we're talking food, good food that would be available right at the end of the block. We all
beautiful.
Grew up like that.
Tom, can I also put in a sidebar? One of the things that we're able to do at our market is that we are part of the Fresh Access Buck program, which is an incentive program for those people who are on food stamps or SNAP program. We can double their benefits whenever they purchase. If they purchase $10 worth, we can give them $20 worth. If they up to $40, if they purchase $40 worth, then we can give them $80.
Jim Bellamy, thank you so much for everything that you did down there in Frenchtown. Derek Phillips and Gray Javinsky, thanks for coming by talking about local farmers here on Perspectives today.
Thank you, Tom.
We'll see you at the Farmers Market coming up every weekend. Perspectives produced by WFSU Public Media. We had Taylor and we had Lydell back behind the glass today. I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, we'll lace up our running shoes in preparation for the Bluebird Run for Brookie B. That's coming up next week right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.